You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC, 1 FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web.
All over the World Wide Web. My name is Ellen O'Neill, and I am Sita's co-host for the last 14 years or so. We are found online at 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button. Or if you can't get to the show live, then you just go to the on demand and you can pick the date. We also post all of our information on our Facebook page, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, as well as our website, sitamediainc.com. Hard to believe it's been 14 years, but another Thanksgiving to say happy Thanksgiving this week.
That's
right. Thank you, Sita, for our show, for all the guests that we've had on, for all the wonderful people that have shared fabulous stories and unique inspirations. Thank you all.
And today's no different. We're here in our living room, so to speak. We get 1 hour here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, where we can sit on Mondays and talk about kitchen table topics and things that are going on around the nation. Actually, right here in Brevard County, Florida, in our state, the state of Florida, and we can talk about topics that are going on in all 50 states. You and I and our resident guest, Miss Allie Tambor.
Good.
And we have a visitor today. My friend is visiting from Trinidad, and she's just sitting there, just having fun with us.
I know. Talking about the beautiful island of Trinidad.
That's right. And so, our show today, we somehow got something mixed up a little bit, but we got it fixed.
It's all fixed.
And you know what? That's a great thing about live radio and having a lot of friends. You can have guests at any given time. So today we have a friend, Siobhan Scott, who's calling in, and she is an author. She's a writer. She is also a mental health therapist, contributing writer, and fearless. She wrote and she studied at the University of San Francisco, but she's calling in from Oregon. And then our second segment will be with attorney Shelley Page. And Shelley is the assistant professor of law and director of experimental education at Illinois University. And she's going to be calling in second segment to speak a little bit about experiencing dementia with her mom. And she's going to be talking about domestic violence. So our first segment, we're going to go right to Siobhan Scott, because I feel like I know Siobhan, because everything she talks about on her social media feed is exactly what I want to talk about, but it's just the way she expresses it. It's so inspirational, and it motivates me on a daily basis when I see her posts, and I'm like, oh, I wanted to say that, but I couldn't say the way Siobhan said it. So thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my friend.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here and chat again.
Yes. And I know that you are taking time off your busy schedule for all the great things you do. So thank you for doing that. She's a psychotherapist. So talk to us. Tell our listeners a little bit about your mental health practice. And, you spend a lot of time talking to people about the little stuff and the big stuff. And you talk a lot about relationships and relationships with parent to kid. And you help people to put their life together when it's falling apart.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this work since, the late 1980s. I've been in private practice, independent private practice since 1991. So I have seen thousands and thousands of clients since then. Far more people than I can remember, but I definitely remember the themes and how to live our best life considering the various stresses that we have is sort of the thing that keeps me going personally, and then trying to always find very practical ways to help other people live as well as they possibly can, considering all the things life throws at us. It's complicated, and it's never easy. There are no easy formulas. There is no template. We have to use our good minds to find the ways to cope and to become clear on our values. And the big thing that I deal with in November and December are people and their stresses over the holiday season, which is, it's just a very perilous time for folks. There's so much going on. So very busy months for therapists, typically.
So how are we going to cope? Because we're all watching what happened at the midterms, and so many families have been torn apart by one thing, and one thing only, politics.
Yeah.
I mean, if honestly, I see it, and I'm sure Allie could jump in here and Ellen could jump in here. You've seen it in your family and friends circle as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, most certainly. And it is, she's absolutely right. This is a very stressful time.
Right.
Because you know something's going to fall through the cracks, and that's where you start, and you're like, eek. So
yeah.
Good for her to help.
And Ellen, you've seen it.
Well, and sometimes it's just even the road rage and the traffic.
Oh.
That's going on, you know.
We've
experienced
that this
many
morning.
Exactly. We especially living in Florida, we have such a huge population that is only here part time of the year.
People are so angry.
They are really angry, and politics obviously has something to do with it. But I think people are just like angry and uptight in general.
They don't know how to enjoy life on this planet. So
right.
Our friend Siobhan Scott is going to just let us know, how can we survive and stress during these stressful times.
Well, you're bringing up really good points. Road rage, people being rude in stores, the domestic violence that's going on. What we're seeing are people who are over the brink with what they can handle with stress. And there are many, many factors for it. Politics just sort of being the icing on the cake now, but you combine climate change, the economy, culture wars on, you know, sexuality, all the different topics, religion. And I do a lot of explaining to people. I like to talk about our neurobiological system, which is the way our brain and our body are integrated. And stress throws us out of balance. It throws us out of homeostasis. And I use the analogy with my clients of, imagine your neurobiological system is a glass full of water. And you want some life in that glass. You want it full of water. But what happens when you throw an Alka-Seltzer tablet in that water? It starts to fizz. And what happens when you throw 10 Alka-Seltzer tablets in that glass? It starts to fizz over. And what happens when you throw 20 Alka-Seltzer tablets? You have a situation that's out of control. And when the neurobiological system is out of balance like that, what we see are fight or flight responses, anxiety, depression, rage, and some people just shut down emotionally and get very depressed. And I think we're looking at a culture where we're seeing a lot of dysregulated people, and that puts us all at risk because, of course, people become more violent. And, you know, we see these things. It's scary to watch the news because we see so many dysregulated people. So the number one place to start is becoming very mindful and aware of what are my signs that I'm over the top with stress. And that's where I start with my clients, because we're all different. Some people predominantly do anger, other people start having panic attacks, and other people go to bed and, you know, drink a bottle of wine and just don't get up for 3 days.
Or eat.
None of these are good. but you know, the first thing, of course, is we want to get as much Alka-Seltzer out of the glass as we can. You know, what are the stressors? Is it a job that somebody needs to dial back their work hours? Are they taking on too much responsibility? Is it debt? You know, they're burying themselves because they're self-medicating with online shopping. Now they're buried in credit card debt, looking at bankruptcy. You know, so we have to look very practically, how do we get some of this Alka-Seltzer out of the glass? And then the other area to work on is, how do we increase the capacity of the glass? Because we're all born with a different nervous system. And I like to say, some people have sort of a big gulp. They can handle a lot of stress and just kind of roll with it. And other people are born with a shot glass. And, you know, they can't handle very much before they start having symptoms. And
hit on something very important there, because, you know, for the people who are born with the shot glass, or maybe somebody have a whole flask, like I know some people in Trinidad, they'll have a whole flask of stress, right? But what about setting boundaries? I mean, people are so afraid to set boundaries, even though they're engaging in toxic behaviors, toxic dynamics. Yeah. They have poisonous family members. They have poisonous friends, neighbors, and they know they have this poison just eating away at them, but they just don't know how to form those boundaries to say, I'm older, I'm bolder, I'm wiser, and I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a huge part of therapy, is learning, number one, learning the boundaries you need to set. How do you know you need to set them? And then giving yourself permission to do that. And a lot of people need really specific coaching. You know, I role play with people. Okay, I'm going to be your nasty boss who, you know, says a lot of cutting, personally critical things to you. I will play that role. Now, you talk to me and you set limits, and I go through body language with people. It's very challenging. And, you know, some people are temperamentally very different. Some people are just very passive, and so they end up being very agreeable, and other people take advantage of them. Another area of boundary setting right now is just work time, because so many people are, you know, I had a client just a couple of days ago who's really having a breakdown, and he's going to end up having to leave a job because he has not been able to set boundaries around his work hours. So he's working 14-hour days, and I don't even know that the employer is really requiring it. It's like this person just doesn't understand the signs of when he's overdoing it, and then he's starting to have panic attacks and depression and all these other symptoms. So boundary setting is huge, and you mentioned toxic family members. Unfortunately, not because, you know, just because we're related doesn't mean that everybody in our family is a nice person.
Ding, ding, ding.
Allie said ding, 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 like light bulb goes off in head. And it's so true. And I think around the holidays, I've had people say to me, I'm already stressing about the holidays, and I haven't had to sit at the table with so-and-so as yet. I can't stand being in the same space with them for more than an hour. I mean, how do you set the boundaries? I mean, the Christmas meal, the Thanksgiving meal, it's going to take a couple of hours. People need to probably start playing. Maybe I'll go for a walk afterwards. Maybe I'll, you know, go for, if you're in Florida, you could swim if your pool is heated. But you've got to find ways to maybe walk away from where everybody is and take that time for yourself.
Yeah, there are so many ways to walk away. It's a good term. And, you know, there are situations, of course, I often hear the worst of the worst families, and particularly if you have people who are alcoholic or there's been domestic violence in the family, you have to wonder, why do you do this? Why are you doing this? Are you chasing a fantasy? If this is truly making you sick, you know, I certainly don't want my adult kids to come over for a holiday and be regretting it. I mean, that would be horrible, you know, or feeling like we don't want to do this. It's like give yourself permission to engage with family in a way that's comforting, that's nurturing, that adds to your life. And if it doesn't do that, maybe you need a chosen family. You know, go find friends. Go find other people, you know.
Well, and going back to what you said about boundaries, my last name is O'Neill. So, like, we are professional drinkers. And but we made rules. You know, we did make rules. Like, that there were some times that we just said, there'll be no alcohol at dinner. And then everybody else can kind of make their decisions as to what they want to do. So, going back to the boundary part, it's real important that people understand that you can make rules like that in your own house and say there will be no alcohol or there will be no politic talking or there will be no whatever it is that is your stressor, that we're not going to do any of that and we're just going to enjoy each other. And then call foul if somebody tries to break the promise.
And if you try that and people don't, I had an alcoholic brother-in-law when I was a child growing up, and I can tell you how many holidays he ruined, and nobody enjoyed it, you know? And so I think you can make the rules, and if people don't respect the boundaries, then you can all do something different, you know? I talk a lot about the way our culture, we tend to chase this fantasy happiness, and at the holidays, you know, people get caught up in how it's supposed to be, and we're supposed to enjoy each other, and then they go into incredible negative mood states when it doesn't turn out that way. And I prefer the term contentment to happiness, you know, because happiness is a fleeting emotion. It comes and goes. It depends on circumstances, but I think it's a very wise place to try to build a content life. And then I actually have people make two lists. One list is, these are things that add to my contentment, and that includes people. And then make a list of things that detract from my contentment. And sometimes just writing those things down is eye-opening, because people have so many things that they're doing that cause stress, and it takes away from their sense of contentment.
Well, we just want to let our listening audience know we're speaking with our friend Siobhan Scott, and she's calling in from Oregon, and she's a psychotherapist and an author. And, you know, I've been reading some of the stuff you wrote on social media, and you talk about we owe ourselves a social contract. That we owe ourselves and others. Talk to us a little bit about a social contract, and how can someone say, I'm going to do this for myself? Because, you know, I've seen, like, people would be talking about using our roads and using our public service and using public health and using Medicare, Medicaid, and then they say, oh, well, I don't want to talk about politics. I don't want to talk about socialism. I don't want to talk about communism. But at the same time, they're talking about social programs they're using, and it makes you so mad, and you say, okay, let me time out for Sita Begee. How can I fix this so that my guest knows which buttons to push and what not to push?
It's really complicated, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think you're hitting on another key point that I talk about over and over. We have this delusion that humans are logical and that they can look at facts and then come to appropriate conclusions based upon the facts. And in truth, we are so illogical as a species. You know, we just think with our emotions, we think with our gut, and we're not thinking with our prefrontal cortex, which is the logical part of our brain very often. So when we talk about social contracts, I have a person in my family, a distant family, who lives on disability, whose adult daughter lives on disability, and yet he votes to cut all social programs. And when they need home health care, he's the first one to say, but isn't there an agency that will come, you know, help us with this? And it just makes my head spin.
Yeah, you want to shake them
so
and say, yeah, I see them. We run into them all the time, and it's like they'll say, oh, I don't believe in socialism. But dude, you know, and so I think when you sit down at your table for Christmas or Thanksgiving, and you know that one family member who is using all these programs and then sits there and acts all high and mighty, you want to say, give me back that plate of food. you know, because it's like, they make your blood boil, right? It's like, okay, and you know, it's hard.
Well, that's your boundaries, isn't it? He's like, we're not going to discuss this at dinner.
Yeah, but not everybody will honor those boundaries. And I'll be completely honest and transparent here. There are relatives in Oklahoma and Texas who have a very different political point of view than Portland, Oregon, where I live. And you know what? We have all moved to parts of the country that we sit in, and they've all blocked me on Facebook. They're cousins. Most of them I've never met, but we connected online. Oh, we're all going to have this nice family relationship. It didn't take long for them to block me. And that was a nice boundary. And I can tell you, I shed no tears on that. I would never choose together with these people in person. I mean, we have nothing in common. Our values are different. Our worldviews are different. We come from different realities. And we don't have to blend with everybody. You know, now if it's a father or somebody that you're absolutely, you know, you're sort of stuck with them, even there are people who say, you know, I'll go for hors d'oeuvres and then I'm leaving, but once he starts with the ranting, I'm just
in Trinidad
going.
They say, once you start with your shenanigans, I'm gone.
I love that.
But you know what? Life is complicated, right? And people make terrible mistakes, and then they try to correct them as they get older. We get bolder, we get wiser. But how do we talk to people that we know that they're going down that dark rabbit hole, and they're so angry, and they're so mean, and they're so spiteful, and they're so judgmental? They'll talk about other people. They'll talk about the relative who's gay, whether that person, he's not looking towards them to pay his bills, his mortgage, his car payment, and live. But yet still, we have a certain segment of our family and friends that are still stuck in those kind of thinking. How do we get those people to be a little bit more open-minded and non-judgmental.
Well, that's a hard one, you know, because so much of this has to do with personality. And that's another thing I think I feel pretty strongly about. We really can't change people, you know. And there are people who are mean-spirited. They do a lot of really unhealthy psychological projection, defense mechanisms. You know, they like to hold grudges, and I call them grievance collectors. Every unhappy emotion they have is someone else's fault, and they continually externalize blame without maybe looking at what they're doing that's causing them to be miserable. And I look at folks like that as these are people that do, when I look at that, you know, what adds to my contentment in life, what adds to my peace, what takes away from it, there are a lot of people I just do not want to be close to. You know, maybe they're an acquaintance, but they're not in my inner circle. And, you know, the most we can do if we're forced to be around people like that is be a good role model. But in all likelihood, it's not going to sink in. And so there are personalities that are just very resistant to what we would call altruism or insight or being good people. You know, if we had a magic wand to make people be empathic and kind, we would have used it, you know, eons ago. We just aren't that powerful.
So how do you help the grievance collectors? Because the grievance collectors collect memories from the time they were walking and talking and breathing. They just can't seem to let, like I say, live each day as it comes. We can't fix, you know, we can't worry about yesterday. We can't worry about tomorrow. It's today. Every day you wake up is a great day, right? And it's like you're on this huge vacation on planet Earth. And for me, that works. But for the grievance collectors, that does not work. And they bring their grievance and their stress everywhere they go.
Yeah, yeah. And this is really usually pretty ingrained personality stuff. So I don't know that there's a fix for it. And, yeah. And that's a place I've had to come as a therapist, because as a young woman, I was in my mid-20s when I started this path. I'm in my mid-60s now. And so it's been a long time. But I really had this enthusiastic delusion that psychotherapy could change the world and that we could transform everyone. And I actually thought by the time I'm 35, I'll probably be out of business because we'll have fixed everybody. And, you know, that's a recipe for burnout because, you know, we just are not that powerful. And there are people who, by virtue of their genetics and who knows all the different factors, we can talk about that forever, but they are just angry people who hold grudges, and they have a paranoid worldview, and there's not a lot that we can do about it other than take care of ourselves if we have to be around them and limit the time and set those boundaries, and they're going to do life their way.
And I love the work that you've done with, you know, especially the book, The Minds of Mass Killers, because it really does, you know, we're not talking about mass killers right now, we're just talking about people that are angry and necessarily might have, but the connection and the correlation of where I see what you're talking about here and the book about genetics and, you know, who knows whether is it, you know, astrological signs? What is it that makes people certain ways? But, you know, it goes back to what we always say, Sita, about the family being the foundation and that we really have to identify some of these things early, you know, because children are born with you know, deficiencies, with mental capabilities that they might have challenging. It's not something that they're necessarily born into, and that's how they're raised, not all the time.
Right.
I just thought it was just very connective.
Yeah, there's a new book out called Blueprint, and it's a very good book translating some fairly complicated genetics into terms that the rest of us can understand. We have really good data and science now that personality is 50% inherited for most personality qualities. For psychopathy, who are, you know, the worst of humanity as far as committing violent crime and doing, you know, pretty horrible things, 67% heritable. So, you know, when we look at how do we fight that, it's tough. It's tough. And if it were easy, we would have done it ages ago. I've worked a lot with all kinds of people. And now in this phase of my life, I work predominantly with just normal people who are dealing with stress and depression and anxiety and all the things we've been talking about. But I've certainly spent years working with people with severe personality problems. And I can tell you the most we can do often is get them in a structured management problem where we're trying to convince them that putting the brakes on their worst impulses is worth doing because that's the only way they're going to stay out of prison. But, you know, we can't really change so much about who they really are.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of what you talk about, too, is trauma and loss and how we recover from that. And I think as a nation, not just speaking about one person or just people here in Florida, but I feel like our nation right now, a lot of us are feeling like we have experienced some sort of trauma and loss. When we look politically at the landscape here in the United States with so much anger and hate and envy and jealousy and racism and all the everything that's coming at us, we have 3 minutes left. How can you tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, what can we do to heal our nation and heal ourselves going forward?
Well, I think turning down the heat on the anger and the distress and the trauma, I think the more time we spend on terrible news, I mean, I like to have the balance of knowing what's going on in the world generally, but I cannot watch trauma stories over and over and over. And there are people that stay tuned in almost every waking hour to stories of trauma and stories of trauma around the world. And we pick up trauma vicariously. We react as if we're experiencing it. And I think we have to limit that, go back to self-care, going back to finding a way to live with some internal sense of peace, and then spreading that, spreading the good news, spreading kindness, you know, and just setting that intention every day of I am going to focus on healing and love and compassion and altruism, and I'm going to be kind to people, I am going to smile. People catch emotions from other people. And I think if we can collectively start to turn down the heat on the anger and the violence and the rage, and, you know, it's possible to be aware but to dose it and to not be immersed in trauma through the internet. I think that's making it worse.
Yeah, and cable news, I mean, if you notice, like, all the political pundits, they all start with the two words, I think, mm-hmm. I think. And it's like, mm-hmm. We don't really want to hear what you thought about anymore. Everything is I think. In the meantime, they're making so much money for those two words, I think, which is their opinion.
Yeah.
It's not really the truth, right? So tell our listening audience where they can find your books and where they can follow you, and tell our listeners where your practice is. If someone has an addiction or someone needs assistance, mental help, they can call you. We'd like to put that on our website as well.
Sure. Well, if people can follow me, and I have a lot of articles. I'm on Substack under my name, Siobhan Stott. I also have a website that has videos and some of my various media interviews and mentions my books. It's just SiobhanStott.com. The name is spelled SiobhanStott.com. And I can be reached there. I'm happy if people contact me. I'm happy to offer resources and referrals. My practice has been full for several years now, so I'm not able to personally take new clients, but I'm happy to provide information. And on the website and on Substack, I have a lot of articles on the topics that we've been talking about today.
Yeah. And, you know, the next time you call in, I'd love to do a segment on just self-care. I mean, you are so good. You've taken your expertise and your experience with your daily life and the therapy that you give to others, and you've put it into such wonderful work on your social media. And you empower a lot of us. And I know I'm one of the ones that you have changed my mind in a lot of ways. So I'd like to do a show one day on just self-care. I mean, people don't even think about a walk in the park or meditation, or think, just walk with your best friend for 30 minutes and talk, sit on a bench. And it's such great therapy, and it's free, and people don't think about stuff like that.
No, and those are the things that add up. People often think they have to have this, you know, $10,000 vacation, and that's self-care. It's like, no, usually that just adds to stress. Now you're in debt, and you've had, you know, debt lag, and and food poisoning, and it's like self-care is really the little things we do every day. So, yeah, I'm happy to talk about that.
Well, thank you so much, Siobhan Scott, for calling in. It's been a pleasure speaking to you this morning. Happy Thanksgiving to your family and to you. And we are going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Harrison Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. We are heard on the World Wide Web all over the world.
That's right. You can just hit that 1510WWBC.com, and there is a Listen Live button right on that homepage that you can listen to all of our shows right from your listening device. Or if you'd like to hear them later, they're all archived on that same spot. Also on Facebook, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and SitaMediaInc.com, our website.
And our second segment, Ellen, is going to be fantastic.
One of our favorites.
One of our favorite. One of my really good friends, Shelley Taylor Page, who's a licensed attorney, a law professor. Now she's taking care of her mom. She moved. I follow her on Facebook, and she inspires me to the fact that culturally, she's doing something that's near and dear to my heart. She's taking care of her mom. And Shelley, I can't tell you enough about how I feel when I follow you and mom, all the journeys to the elder care, back to home, You just had her nails done, and I'm delighted that you could take the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, because we were in a bind. We had a bit of a mix-up with our guests. So thank you, and bring us up to speed about what you're doing right now.
It is absolutely my pleasure. And so one of the things that I never had to ever think about is dementia. Even up until my mom moved in with us June, we went to pick her up in June, and even if she was living with a brother, one of my brothers, and she moved in with my younger sister, and I would go to Houston to visit, and I'd see her, and she'd stay with us sometimes when we were there, but it is not until you are full-time caregiving for somebody with dementia that you realize just how serious it is, and everybody's dementia is going to differ. So my mom, she completely forgets things. And see, this is how I explain it. The conversation we're having right now, imagine everything that's being said and seen is written on a chalkboard. And within seconds of us getting, let's say, down to the fifth or sixth sentence, an eraser is slowly erasing everything that has happened. So when we get to it at the end of a five-minute conversation, when you look back up to see what did we say 3 minutes ago, it is completely erased from my mom's memory. And it is heartbreaking because my mother was two classes away from her PhD in education. She's highly intelligent. I mean, I am a lawyer because my mom and my dad, but my mom was the inspiration for every single one of us to go on to graduate school and to watch
the decline.
Yes. And you know, this is going to sound really horrible, what I am about to say, but until you've cared for somebody with dementia, you really don't get it. If God said, Shelley, would you prefer for your mom to have cancer or dementia? Hands down, I would pick cancer. Assuming the cancer isn't a cancer of the brain, to watch a person's personality be deteriorated, gone right before your very eyes, it is
so you had a big decision to make, Shel, because are you still practicing? I didn't even ask you if you're still.
I am. I'm a law professor, yes.
Yeah, how do you find the time? I mean, because I noticed, like, when you write about mom, thank God you have the adult daycare to take her to.
Yes.
I know, yes. Because she gives you such a hard time to get dressed in the mornings.
Yes. Yes, that's what the lifesaver is. The adult daycare, we also, and she goes Monday through Friday, she gets to stay 6.5 hours. So if I drop her off at 8:30, 6.5 hours later, I pick her up. It does eat into my time at work, but thank God I have a job and a boss who is completely understanding. We also happen to live in a state where marijuana is legal. I give her marijuana edibles. And they don't make her, like, high or drowsy. They calm her down. That is why she doesn't curse me out anymore. She was here for 2 months, and I started giving her those edibles. And, the adult daycare, the edibles, and my husband, and the grace of God, that is how we are surviving.
That's a really good toolkit.
That's your Trinidad connection coming out there, girl.
Well, but it smells like many other medicines. If you don't need it, when you don't need it, then it gets you high. Then it does all that stuff. But when you need it, when the medicine you need it, it actually does what it's supposed to do. So
that's right.
It calms her down. So give us a backstory. How did this happen? Because mom was living on her own, and you were living, and then you were living in your own place, obviously, and then you moved. And you bought the new house.
Yes.
Did you have to pack her up and bring her with you, or was that prearranged?
Yes,
how did it happen?
Backstory real quickly. My mother is one of 11 kids. Of the 11, 4 have dementia. Of the 4, 3 have died. So that uncle who we went to his funeral recently, he had dementia. So my mom is the last living child who has dementia. So my mom actually was an alcoholic for a long time, maybe since I was in high school time. And so my mom has early onset dementia due to alcoholism. So I don't drink alcohol because of the fear of getting dementia. And so my mom, before my dad passed away, there was a time that we couldn't tell, is this alcoholism making her repeat herself, or is this the dementia? Finally, though, my dad died in 08. We begged my mom to move in with us, but for 10 years she lived alone, and she was doing really, really bad. She fell in 2018. My brother finally got her out of her house. She had 3 brain surgeries because she had bleeding on the brain. So for 2 years, she lived with my oldest brother, Greg. Then for 2 years, she lived with my younger sister, Libby. Negatives in both houses. My brother had a ton of people living in his house, and my sister has a job where she was just all over the place. My mother ended up, this past May, wandering away from my sister's house in Houston, Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
A stranger picked her up, brought her to her old house because she remembers her address. The stranger called. My mom could have been murdered, robbed, raped, anything. The stranger called 911. 911 got Adult Protective Services involved. I called my brother, Greg, who at that point, all of the people living in his house were gone. But my brother's wife also happens to have dementia, too. And she's only, like, 55, 56. So at that point, I said, okay, cool. If y'all are not going to be able to take care of Mom, I'm coming to town. And I did. We picked her up May 31st, Memorial Day, and we drove back, and she's been living with us ever since. So originally it was, Mom's going to stay with Shelly just for the summertime. Well, nothing has changed in Houston. They're not able to take care of her, and they don't even have her in, like, at 2 o'clock our time. I'm taking her. She and I are going to a Thanksgiving class. You're going to see me post pictures. I believe in keeping my mom active, the adult daycare. They have people come. They do field trips. And see, it is totally free. So my advice for people who might be a new caregiver, look for the resources where you live, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, wherever you are. And I went to my doctor in July, and I was just crying because I was tired of being cursed out. I didn't know about the marijuana at that time. And so the nurse walked in and she said, Shelly, let me give you some resources. And she gave me a ton of pamphlets. And I called, do you know my mother goes to this place? It is $86 a day. And we pay nothing.
Wow. And, you know, so I have to say, your husband, James Page, God bless him. Not all husbands are like Mr.
Yes.
James Page. I mean,
yes.
He is a living legend in my mind because
yes.
of the kind
yes.
of stuff that Mom puts you through,
yes.
it is a lot
yes.
for Mr. Page. And Ellen's got a question
yes.
for you.
Yeah, so yes, please, Ellen.
It's so good. By the way, happy Thanksgiving. I forget to say it at the end. But what are your coping strategies? We just spent a lovely first segment with Siobhan
yes.
Scott, who's a psychotherapist, and she talked a lot about the caregivers.
Yes.
You know, what do you do for you?
I pray. I also do crafts. So I have a huge craft room downstairs. And y'all, this is going to sound bad, but our house is almost 7,000 square feet. So if I leave my mom upstairs in her room is right at the front door. So if she is not willing to go downstairs with me to my craft room, where I let her sit and watch TV or photo albums to keep her, I lock the door. I lock her door. She has a bathroom. She has a TV. I give her food. That is my me time. I go down in my craft room and I paint, I sew, I quilt, whatever it is. I have a chair I'm recovering. I have a lot of projects. I also make sure to take time out for me. So last Friday, I went to St. Louis, which is a couple hours from here, and I just went to the Goodwill stores. I found 5 different Goodwill stores, and I just shopped at the Goodwill store. So if I have $100, I walk away with $500 worth of stuff because I'm willing to buy secondhand. And that, for me, and we also live on the lake, so I'll go outside and be on my hammock. But
so
I'm
Shelly,
sure to take care. Look, I've lost weight recently, so I really do
congrats.
Make sure.
So Shelly,
if I'm not good, I can't take care of her.
That's right.
Okay,
go ahead,
yeah.
Allie. Shelly, do you have good reasons or why you don't want to put her in assisted living permanently?
Yes. So as a family, we have made the decision to never put my mom in assisted living. And y'all, so my mother grew up in segregated Louisiana. And my mom and some of her sisters were really, really treated poorly by white people. And my mother has that in the back of her mind. When they were little girls, they had to walk on the back roads because white men would pick them up and rape them and kill them. Mm. And a bunch of my mom's friends were killed. So she has a fear of white people, and it's so bad to say that. So in, when my mom is lucid at those many, just tiny brief moments, she will look me in the eye and say, "Shelly, please don't ever put me in a facility." And because of her background and her fear, rational or not, that really is her fear. And also studies show that when a person is home with family versus being put in a facility, their lifespan is much longer when they are at home with family.
Yes. That, and you know what it is, too? You remember, the short-term memory and the long-term memory is affected. And sometimes they forget the short-term memory is gone. The long-term memory of what you just said when she was growing up with her siblings, is still there.
Yeah.
So I can certainly see how she would feel. But I do notice that, you know, with you, I mean, I think it would be great. I mean, you're teaching law, you're taking care of mom, and you found ways to cope. But have you considered writing a book or maybe a journal about your experience? Because I mean, your Facebook posts, they are so uplifting, and they're quite interesting in that you influence a lot of us in that you're handling the dementia in style. Even though you're aggravated, and you do protect her, and you do make sure she's safe. And I see when you go downstairs to do crafts, she's upstairs. And mom has a beautiful room. Everything is so gorgeous about what you're doing for her. So tell us, I mean, you should write a blog or maybe a book or a journal or something to empower others to do the same.
One day I am, guys. And let me tell you, I want to do it before my mom passes away. Because I would love to have a section with my mom where I write verbatim what comes out of her mouth. And let me say, too, my mother was born on a plantation. And this is how crazy it was, y'all, when my mom was born. Midwives, because black people were not allowed in hospitals. So my mother was born to by a midwife. The midwife would write the date of birth on her hand. So my mother doesn't know if she was born in 40 or 41.
Wow.
Because she didn't have a birth certificate like that. So my mom's memory, and she said sometimes when you hear my mom talking, she talks about being raised on a plantation and having to call other the daughters of the plantation owner, Miss Gypsy and Miss Louise. And they were younger than my mom. She had to call them Miss. These are real memories in her mind. Now, she couldn't tell you what she ate for breakfast this morning, but she can remember back from 1950, 1945, and so, but I do plan to one day write a book, but I hope to do it where it's not just my point of view, but my mom's, because sometimes, y'all, she really, just imagine if everything you have done today, you have no memory of it, and your husband or your child is looking at you saying, "You know you robbed a bank today." And you're like, "What? You're crazy. I didn't rob." Because in your mind, you have no memory of robbing a bank. So when this morning I go in my mom's room, y'all, and she has taken a ton of toilet paper and re-rolled it as a new roll of toilet paper. She's got them all over the room. And so I've learned, do not go in there and say, "Mama, what in the hell did you do today?" Because she's going to say, "Shelly, I didn't do that. I promise that." Because in her mind,
it never happened.
I
have the sweetest story. My friend is going through a similar situation as you, and her mom is 96. And every so often, she comes up with these really cute things. Like, she looks at her and says, "Baby, did I give you rent today? Like, did I give you rent? Mm. Do we?" You know, because she lived her life in poverty for the most part, and always like paycheck to paycheck. So she gets these moments where she's real concerned that the bills haven't been paid or something like that. And she, and it, like, the sweetest moments of like connectivity that she really, it really seems like she's connecting, but she's connecting 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, y'all. And just how we're able to have this conversation. Do not take it for granted, y'all. And so I'm over the JDMD program at our law school. And it's where you go to law school for 2 instead of 3 years, and then medical school for 4, and you graduate with a JD and an MD.
And so the counterpart of mine in the medical school, Dr. Mick, he and I walk and we talk about this program we're putting together. He told me, because he knows about my mom, he said, Shelly, two things I can tell you, really three, to help you prevent from getting dementia, because you come from a line where people have dementia. Maintain a healthy weight. So, y'all, I've just recently lost 33 pounds, and I'm still on my way to losing more. He also said, get at least 7 hours of good sleep a night. And what happens, just how our body gets rid of toxins through us, our lymphatic system, through sweating. Well, our brain does not sweat. Our brain has a different system to get rid of toxins. The only way our brain gets rid of those toxins is if we have a deep sleep and it lasts at least 7 hours. And then the last thing he told me, make sure you're learning something new every single day. And so I make sure to learn a new word. I'm in the EDD program, get my doctorate in education, not because I need another degree, but just because I want to keep my brain active.
Right. And was it very, well, of course, you know, I'm a nurse and I do work and, you know, in the nursing facilities where I take care of a lot of dementia patients, but what I do find is a lot of the families found it to be very frustrating when their loved ones could not perform very familiar, easy tasks. Like that frustration of somebody not being able to button a shirt or put on a sock or looking at their plate and not knowing what to do with the food. Because dementia, it just robs you of your memory and everything that was good in your life.
Thank God my mother is not at that stage. She also has not lost control of her bladder. And probably when we get to that stage, I will have to have somebody come in to help me. But I have no problem picking out her clothes. Something else, y'all, this simple. When we go to a restaurant, my mother lacks the ability to look at a menu and say, I want the chicken and pasta. She cannot do it. And it's so sad.
Yeah.
How bad.
Yes,
she will look at me and she will say, Shelly, you pick for me.
Yeah, and
you pick her out the best stuff, don't you, babe?
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
And you know what you've done? You've taken the personality changes that mom has, and you've turned it into something positive. You have, and all of us could see, don't cry, but I love you, and I love what you're doing for your mom. And we did the same thing for my mom, too. And we watched the personality changes, and we watched the changes in mood and behavior. And every person attacks it in a different way. And you've chosen to share it with us on your Facebook feed. And I do notice that the other day you had to boof up a few people, like they say in Trinidad.
Yes.
Somebody must have told you something, and you said, I'm not taking it, I'm boof your tail off.
Yeah.
So tell us, who did you have to boof up and for what?
I'm going to tell you, it is my oldest brother's mother-in-law. I have known this.
But she got told. She got told.
And she got blocked. I blocked her. I blocked her daughters. I blocked everybody who knows her. Because you can say a lot of things about me, but I take care of my mother. And see, I really started posting these posts because when she lived with my youngest sister is really in denial that my mom has dementia. And she made us believe, oh, my dementia's not that bad. She's doing good. I'm not like that. I want you to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have great days. We have great hours. We have horrible days and horrible hours. So when I would post it, it was really just like, y'all, let me tell you what happened today. I walked in my mama's room, and oh my gosh, I love to decorate. My mother's room when she got here, pictures of my dad, pictures of her siblings, teddy bears, a bear that I make, all kind of decorations. Child Georgiana Gret, she packed that stuff up. She would take the
I
trash
remember
bag
that
out
post. She put it all in the trash, and I thought it was so funny because I see my mommy's, and then all of a sudden I'm like, somebody's not liking Shelly's post because that person has an axe to grind in their own life. They got to fix their own business.
Let me tell you, remember I told you my oldest brother's wife has dementia? It's her daughter. And so she, you know, some people are embarrassed about diseases, and you would never know her daughter, who's only like 58-ish, she's maybe 3 years older than me, has dementia. They don't post about Michelle. They don't say anything. You would never, and Michelle's dementia is worse than my mom. She can't walk. She can't talk. Doctors don't know why she can't walk or talk. And so really that was Miss Dorsey's embarrassment about her own daughter. But I tell you what, she learned that day, don't come and play with me.
You're not for play.
No.
But you know what? Danny said, you go, girl. But you know, I think human beings have lost the essence that we are tribal. We need
yes.
each other. I know me. I
yes.
need my tribe. I need my people around
yes.
me. I don't want to be
yes.
isolated. I have family members that like their tribe. They have trusted people
yes.
in their circle, and it's wonderful. But how do
yes.
you convey that to people that as we get older and bolder and we're getting wiser, that all of us need the strength of the young to take care of the old? That's what life
yes.
is about. Our culture
mm-hmm.
should be that
yes.
you need me and I need you. We are a service-oriented world. Whether we like to hear that or not, we do need each
yes.
other. And your post,
mm-hmm.
you're sharing
mm-hmm.
what's happening with mom so that other people could learn how to cope with misplacing things and memory loss
yes.
and misplaced
yes.
judgment and the aging process.
You have to have patience. You have to have patience for your patients. I mean, really, I come out of the room and I'll tell my husband, you're not going to believe what my mom just said. She looked at me and said, Shannon, where did I leave my car? She hasn't had a car in 8 years. So now, we'll be driving right here through southern Illinois. She'll say, what part of Houston is this? It's the south side, Mom. I don't even go there with her. I'm not trying to get her upset. But see, you know, the Bible says, don't throw your pearls to swine. So for the people who come to my wall and can walk away with some nugget of truth, praise God. For the buttholes who can't, keep it moving.
You buff them up, girl.
That was so one more funny quick story. Every time
yes.
my friend pulls in the garage with her mom, every so often she'll look over and she goes, you know this other side's not supposed to be cluttered with all this stuff. It's supposed to have your husband's truck in it. And she's single. She's been single for like 40 years.
So Shelly, we have 1 minute left. Is there anything you want to share with our audience in 1 minute? Because you are speaking with the people at the university, and I'm sure your students are cracking up those
yes.
law students with your stories.
Yes.
But 1 minute,
yes.
give us your quick little minute. What else can you share with our listeners before we go off air?
Truly remember the person that you're caring for, who they were before dementia attacked their brain. Go back to when you were small, when you learned to ride a bike, when your mother put a Band-Aid on your knee, when she changed diapers. We are only returning a small portion of what our parents or our loved ones gave to us. And even if your parent wasn't the nicest to you, we, like people, what you said, being tribal, we have the responsibility of taking care of the people who are going before us. Because one day, you may be in a position where you need care. I have two boys, and I hope that my boys are seeing what I'm doing for my mom in case one day they have to do it for me. So be patient. Be a sense of humor. When you are cursed out and called horrible names, remember it's that dementia talking and not the person who's saying it.
So live by example. Basically, we live by example.
Yes.
So I know
yes.
we can find
yes.
you on Facebook. Where else can we find
you?
Do you have
you
a website?
I don't. Yes, I don't have a website.
You don't need one.
Yes.
I just make sure Facebook is where we can find all your great stories and all the
yes,
great information
so
about you. Thank you so much for calling in today, Miss Shelly Page. It has been
thank
a pleasure
you.
As always. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Keep up the good work.
Listen,
you
you're
too.
My Trini connection, whether you know it or not. I knew I could count on you today.
Yeah, I love you.
Love you, too.
Folks, we're going to sign off for another great edition.
Thank you.
Thank you. Another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC. Y'all, happy Thanksgiving, and we will see you next week for another great edition at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here.